the John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston accent.
Big jab there from Duffy, and Frank Mir is hurt now. Oh! Down goes Duffy on call. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
I can't believe
they're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, our producer TJ DeSantis trying to make me smile early this week. He's going to the backup open that should be the regular open, the Mir Duffy open, as we call it. Oh, let's go, Ken Flo. Monday, May 4th, episode 248 of the Anik and Florian podcast. Nearly hit it perfectly there with episode 249. But this time it's really fight week, kid. It's a pay-per-view week. It is UFC 249. It is five sleeps away. And I don't know what day this is for you of basically immediate family isolation. It's day 53 for me.
Man.
So I'm excited to drive to Jacksonville on Thursday. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, I could tell you got your head freshly shaven, which is nice to see. That means Anik's ready to work. And it kind of, I don't know what it is. Obviously, we haven't had fights for a long time, but just, you know, the opening and seeing you all ready to rock, it almost seems like this is our first podcast. You know what I mean? It's like, right. I have that same giddiness and excitement, and we finally have some fights to talk about. I'm really excited to go in on that and smash Ian Parker.
Yeah, we're not killing clock talking about fake fights and the Right Now Pound for Pound tournament anymore. We will, though, let you know who won the Anik and Florian podcast Right Now Pound for Pound tournament. Thanks to everybody, by the way, who went to AnikFlorianPodcast.com and voted there or on the other platforms as well. Really appreciate the outpouring. And it came down to less than 20 votes between John Jones and Khabib Nurmagomedov, which is just insane. So seems like the UFC, in a lot of respects, got their pound-for-pound debate correctly. So this Thursday, I will be driving to Jacksonville, Florida. It's about 304 miles to the host hotel. Happy to report, and it'll be somebody else who gives you all the details, but the UFC is going above and beyond. I couldn't feel better about what the protocol is going to be when I drive into that host hotel and what they're going to be putting us and the fighters through during fight week. But I guess big picture for our audience, they probably care less about coronavirus and COVID-19 protocol. They care about fights. And Saturday night, Ken Flo, you will be sitting home, presumably, watching a UFC pay-per-view and a live sporting event for the first time in a very long time. I mean, even yesterday, we came in from the pool, right? Poor me, I know, right outside with my kids in the pool that is finally working properly. But I came inside and be like, man, it'd be nice to put on a basketball game, an NBA playoff game right now. And there's just nothing. And if you're trying to avoid like the global pandemic coverage, you know, you got Baby First TV, a few other things, Ken Flo, but, you know, I'm just jonesing for live sports, and obviously the UFC is going to provide that in a big way here in a few days.
And me as well. And listen, I'm a car guy. I love motorsports. I'm not a NASCAR fan for whatever reason, and they're coming back, but I couldn't care less about that. I want to see fights. That's the thing I'm most interested about anyway, as far as across the board in all sports. So I'm excited to see some fights. You know, the card is just fantastic. And again, it seems like the UFC is back full steam.
It's funny that you're not a NASCAR guy, because back in the day, Sporting News Radio in Boston, 1510, The Zone, we had rights to NASCAR. And so I started betting on the races. And you get a couple drivers every Sunday. All of a sudden, it becomes pretty interesting to watch them go around the track, especially for the last 50 laps or so. But yeah, too many crashes, too many stoppages in play, if you will. And not the television sport for me. All right. Hotline is 857-301-8994 if you want to chime in at all during the show today. But more importantly, after UFC 249, if you do want to share thoughts with us after the pay-per-view this weekend, 857-301-8994. Wanted to hit it off the top of the show so it would be easy for you to go back and find if you're not logging it down. We know another guy who will be sitting in front of the TV or an iPad this weekend is the great Raymond Peter Longo. Let us get to the Ray Longo Minute.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Oh, and I hope Longo's jumping out of his clothing in New York State today with energy, because it is a pay-per-view week. It's good to hear that laugh, my man. How are you?
Very good, very good. Wow, I tell you, interactive podcast now, people are calling in. Where this thing is really taking off. Crazy.
Yeah, I think it's more incumbent upon me to make sure that I ask Cody Merrow to get us those voicemails a little bit earlier, but we will have voicemails on the show next week. None today. There were a couple good ones, though. None today that we thought were warranted being on the air. But how are you doing, man? I mean, how's this weighing on your mind, the isolation, everything else over the last 7 days?
I got to tell you, I feel like it's I'm starting to see a light at the end of the tunnel. I really do. I don't know. I mean, I was listening to you guys talk, definitely excited about the fights. I mean, I think, like Kenny was saying, like, I love the fight. So, I mean, it's going to give you a sense of some sort of normalcy getting back to watching the fights. Because when was the last time a fight was on? Do we even know? How long ago was that?
So it was March 14th in Brasilia, a week after the last pay-per-view.
Isn't that crazy, Miss Roma? 2 months.
Right.
So this is big, and like again, I think it'll at least give people if that's what you were into, and that's I mean most of the people we're surrounded by, that's what they're into. So I think it'll give the people a sense of, man, okay, something's going on. But I am seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. We have one of those disinfecting crews at the gym today, so we're getting ready to open up and. Hopefully, that's within a couple of weeks. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you got to get Aljamain Sterling at least back in those doors with some bodies before June 6th, if it's safe to do so. I know he did mention on social media, Ray, that June 6th is going to be the date. So pretty exciting. That aligns to potentially be a pay-per-view UFC 250. You got to feel good about that, I would think.
Yeah, really good. And I'll tell you, he's got really good guys right now, so I couldn't ask for more. I don't think he could either with the people he's training with. So I feel really good about that. And then I'm going to say, probably next week we'll be back in the gym. You know, hopefully. What's today's date? The 4th?
You got a lot of questions for us today, Ray. Yeah, May 4th is the date.
Yeah, so I don't know, because right now he's training, basically at Al's, but the quality of guys he has is awesome. The conditions, I'm going to say, aren't, but, I think he's doing a great job so far, sending me to spar and all of that stuff, so it looks good.
We are going to get your thoughts on the two title fights, but before that, Merab Dwalishvili, UFC bantamweight contender, hopeful type from the great nation of Georgia. Have you been following what he's been doing on social media? Building like a rope swing and climbing trees. And
I mean, have you ever seen a guy that loves life more than this guy? I mean, I can't tell you. I know I've said it a million times, but you cannot meet this guy and not love him. He is really he's so genuine and sincere, and you could see you're not getting that guy down. When he started swinging his bicycle around like he had a 45-pound plate in his hand, the guy's great. It's from day one, he has never displayed any type of negativity at all. Nothing, like zero. He just, he makes the best of what he's got. And I think when you come from a country like where he's come from, and you see all the, the things that you could get in America. This is a big deal for him, but he's, like a rope swing, to somebody else might just be a rope, piece of rope from a tree. To him, man, it's something to have a blast on and putting his training. And I think just watching him, even at Isles, jumping in the water, he's crazy. Loving life, that guy, and for all the right reasons.
No, I think you put it well. He truly does have a zest for life and a happiness vibe about him that obviously has helped his teammates. You've talked a lot about him and Aljo and Al and the bond that they have. How did that come to pass that Merab aligned with you guys? When was that?
I mean, look, we could discuss that another time because it's kind of a long story. But I was the long and short of it. I had Weidman at Henzo's in the city, and his roommate. It was another guy from Georgia that fought Eddie Gordon at the Ring of Combat, and we were upstairs in the gym, and he came over and, hey, you remember me? And I really didn't, but he said Eddie Gordon, and I go, yeah, I remember. I do remember you. And I go, yeah, what's up? What are you doing here? He was just training for a fight, and I go, you live in New York? He goes, no, I live in Garden City. I'm like, Garden City? Like, I thought it was so weird. That would have been the last place I thought he would say. And I said, well, hey, they got the gym in Garden City if you want to stop by. And he brought Merab down, and they were kind of hooked up with some other guys that were a little wacky, so I had to go in there and just take care of that for them. And then they came to the gym, and that was it, man. And I'll tell you what, I watched that kid really grow. He always, you know, was in shape, but I would say Aljo would torture him with the wrestling back then. He's a guy that really, he learned, you know, that win or learn, whatever the saying is, that's him, man. But if he loses, it's a win for him because he's going to learn from it. And I watched him do this his last 10 fights. So, you know, that's how he came to the gym. And he's really gotten just so much better from the people that he was around that, It's been a great to watch and great to see him grow. It's just phenomenal.
Ray, we have an amazing main event. Tony Ferguson taking on Justin Gaethje, two guys that love to move forward. Two of perhaps the most exciting fighters in the UFC going to go at it here. Who wins this fight?
It's interesting. Gaethje obviously could win it. There's no question about it, but I'm going to go with Ferguson. For being a little more durable, and you know we'll probably mix it up more. And the interesting part now is that Gaethje has had more time to prepare. So, like, if you go back to like the way it was, the first fight, if it happened in April, would have been, I think, even better because I think Gaethje knew he had 15 minutes in him and he was just going to go completely apeshit, you know, which would have made for an exciting fight. So we'll see if the strategy changes. I don't think it will because I think it's just in Gaethje's blood to do exactly what he's doing. I think he openly expresses that, you know, that, you know, defense is second. I'm going forward, man, and I'm throwing hard. And he can get anybody out of there on any given day. I just think Ferguson is, Ferguson is more well-rounded. And again, there's something with Ferguson. Like, again, I always say, like, when you see his opponents after the fight, he's got to have bricks in his hands, that guy, because he cuts you up, he bangs you up. They look miserable in a couple of rounds. So it should be interesting, but I'm going with Ferguson on that.
And Ray, any updates this week? Did you get any free Ferraris delivered to your house, any summer homes, anything like that this week?
No, nothing. No, I'm kind of, I feel a little lift this week. Nothing came to my house.
Ferrari
can you
must
put
have
in
lost.
A word? For, oh no! Oh, you said the Ferraris.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might have shot too big on that one.
All right.
So I got the chance to talk to all four of the championship competing athletes on Friday: Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, Henry Cejudo, Dominic Cruz, and I have to say, to a man, they all sounded so goddamn ready to go, right, that there was no lean for me possibly one way or the other after talking to them. Four athletes that appear primed and ready for May 9th. As far as the bantamweight title fight is concerned, obviously your guy Aljo is there entrenched as the number two ranked contender. He's on the winning streak. Marais is there at number one, but people think that he shouldn't have gotten the nod against Jose Aldo. So Aljo's going to fight Corey Sandhagen, in all likelihood the number four guy in the world. And Dominic Cruz, who is unranked and hasn't competed since 2016, is getting the title fight. Now, circumstances aside, global pandemic aside, how, Ray, do you go about handicapping Dominic Cruz's chances against Henry Cejudo, who, even though he had an invasive shoulder surgery, appears to be the far more primed athlete right now in 2020?
Yeah, well, that's the keys. The, you know, even though Dominic always, you know, goes public with saying ring rust doesn't exist, who knows how his body's going to hold up? The other guy's definitely the fresher of the two. Demetrius Johnson had great footwork, but Dominic could pose a problem for him, but I just don't know if he could pose it for five rounds. So I'm going to go with Cejudo. But it's a big undertaking for Dominic Cruz. But I do think that's what makes him get up for fights. You know what I mean? And I think he's going to put his all into it. That's an interesting matchup. It really is because, you know, Cruz's movement, if he could keep it up, could be a problem. But that's the question to me is, you know, he hasn't done anything, and I don't know, he's got the height, he's got the reach, he could pose a big problem for Cejudo.
Yeah. So Ken Flo's got to make 12 predictions today on Monday during fight week. Nothing really fun about that. I mean, there's no heavy lifting for me today, essentially. I'm just going to be teeing these guys up and laying out. So, Ray, before I let you go, you're Saturday, right? This Saturday, May 9th. How excited are you to sit down and watch fights and have something like a live sporting event legitimately on the calendar? Like, are you going to watch all 12 of these things on Saturday?
Well, of course. No, of course. No, for seriously. Like, look, you guys know we're starving for something. You know,
oh.
If you, I don't know, like, again, what, I'm sure you're seeing the same coverage as I am, but I mean, New York, it's you keep going to those pandemic channels and, you know, CNN and Fox. Dude, you will drive yourself nuts. You know, yeah. Besides the political pettiness that's going on, it is, I there's been days where I just won't turn the TV on, you know, so luckily we have, you know, movies and stuff like that. You know, I do movie night with the family and all shit like that. But, yeah, I'm dying for something. You know what I mean? So I'm watching all. I don't think I'll move out of my seat, to be honest with you. I want to see every one of those fights. And I just want to see how it's going to go off, because that's going to impact, you know, the future the next couple of weeks, too. So does it go off without a hitch? How is it going to be with no audience? You know, it's interesting. But I'm still there with my popcorn front and center looking at that TV.
Yeah. What are you drinking? You drinking water? You drink Diet Coke? What do you got?
No, water. I'm basic. I'm a basic, simple. I'm a simpleton, John.
Yeah.
Simpleton. Yeah. Water.
You put butter on the popcorn? I mean, is that microwavable popcorn? You got a popcorn machine? What are we doing?
Is that what we're down to? Is that where?
Well, no. Yeah, you piqued my curiosity. I'm hungry.
I put the ghee butter on, so it's good for me. I get the good fat.
You can't blow ghee butter, you know, just way over my head. All right, my man. Well, hey, enjoy the pay-per-view. I'm sure you and I will be communicating this week, obviously, leading up to the show. And I guess we will recap it all with you next Monday, unless you got anything else, Raymond.
Nah, that's it, my man. I see a light at the end of the tunnel, and I think it's probably because of the fights that, like, again, will make it appear that, you know, this is what we need. We need something to motivate us and move us forward. So I think the timing is perfect now. You know, I think everybody's ready to move on and take a shot with this thing that was just going on and get back to normal. So I'm excited.
All right, man. Well, we will talk to you next week. And honestly, if you can't figure out the video by next week, then we're not going to have you on the air. So maybe you,
hey, TJ, if you're listening, call me after, because I did find him in my contacts of Skype. So we sure we could do
all right.
You know?
I mean, it's getting a little rough. Right, I mean, it's a 248th episode, Ray. So we will see you next Monday, okay?
It's a 249-step process.
For another week, because I'm hoping next week we're on. I'm keeping this lettuce growing, baby.
All right. And we could bribe you to shave your head, too, if you want to do a fun radio bit. We'll talk about that later. Yeah. Have a good week, kid.
At this point, listen, at this point, it's like being in the... being at the Hanoi Hilton, you could tell me to do anything, I'll do it. Yeah, that's not going to take much. I'm losing my fucking mind over here.
Yeah, right there with you. Right there with you. All right, buddy.
Take
have a good
easy,
week.
Man. You guys are the best. I'll see you next week.
See you, Ray.
Something like it, Ray. Ray Longo Minute every week here on the Anakin Florian podcast. Support for the show comes from the official electric razor of UFC Manscaped. Ever had an awkward moment where you had to grapple with someone who had a full bush coming out of their singlet? Jiu-jitsu back in the 70s, I'm telling you. Well, thankfully, Manscaped has everything you need to keep your package nice and tidy. Manscaped truly is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming, and their top-notch ball trimmer, which I use very often, called the Lawnmower 3.0, will keep you clean without the nicks and cuts you're accustomed to in the past. Manscaped has also partnered with top-tier MMA athletes like Max Holloway, Francis Ngannou, Brian Ortega, and many others who understand that hygiene matters and also know what it takes to be the best. So does this revolutionary company, Manscaped. They just redesigned the Lawnmower 3.0. It features a great ceramic blade with proprietary advanced skin-safe technology. No accidents for me since I started using this thing. And, of course, we want our great listeners and viewers who are men to get involved as well. You can't be using the same trimmer on your face that you're using on your balls. So go to manscaped.com, get 20% off and free shipping with the code AF. Manscaped.com, 20% off and free shipping with the code AF. We appreciate Manscaped supporting mixed martial arts and its athletes worldwide. All right, a lot of business to attend to in the main event challenge. A dozen picks from Ken Flo and the Duck. Let's get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights! I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, we now welcome Ian Parker on to the program. Before we get to the UFC 249 selections, we will give you the final results for our right now pound for pound tournament. 14 votes separated the two finalists, the number one seed John Jones, the number two seed Khabib Nurmagomedov. In the end, John Jones, 51% of the vote is your winner. Most importantly, I just want to shout out our base of listeners, especially those that went to AnnickFlorianPodcast.com. About 2,000 of you went and actually voted on the Google form on our website, so we greatly appreciate that. Amazing to see that it held true, guys, that the one and two seeds, right? I sort of thought that maybe you'd have an Israel Adesanya, maybe because he's the flavor of the month, for lack of a better way to put it, or somebody else emerged. But in the end, it was the one seed over the two seed, and the only drama was how close the vote was. But we don't have much time to spend on that. Ian Parker, how are you, kid?
I'm good. This fucking card this weekend is giving me the energy, although I guess I missed a memo on not wearing a hat day. But otherwise, let's fucking go, Flo. I hope you're ready. You look spry. You look ready. Let's, John, let's go.
You do look good today, Kenny. Your hair actually looks really good. Some product
Thank
in his hair, probably.
Thank you. A little bit of product. It's getting a little out of control, a little longer than I like, but here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Oh, I can't wait to get my ears waxed again. Is that too much information? When the European Wax Center opens again, right? Doing it on my own. My daughter's like, Dad, what's in your ear? It's like, honey.
We need some Manscaped shavers to get in there, or some wax.
I never got a nose wax until Ken Flo tried to do it at home, correct?
It hurts. It hurts.
I get teary eye when I pull them. I get tears.
Yeah,
auto-tear.
It's
not
intense.
Not like it's pleasant when you go and get the professional nose wax, incidentally. But I never even knew you could wax your nose until I saw Ken Flo try and get one day.
Oh, man.
All right. So we had to go all the way back to Brasilia, March 14th, to find some UFC predictions from you guys. Thankfully, our man Brady Miller DFS on social media has the spreadsheet and the documents. So Team Attic now has the lead, 33-31. It was a 6-3 week for Ian Parker for UFC Fight Night Lee versus Oliveira. So a 2-point margin as we begin what we do best on the Anakin Florian podcast, getting predictions every week. And UFC 249 is a mega card, so we're going to go through as many of these as we can, and then we will get some quick picks on some UFC Fight Pass prelims on the way out. But we will start in the middleweight division. This will be the opening prelim you see live on ESPN. Jacare Souza minus 130. Uriah Hall is the even money underdog here. He's been living at Fortis MMA in Dallas, literally sleeping on an air mattress in the gym. But he's got momentum, goes for a third straight win here against the jiu-jitsu legend Jacare Souza. Ian Parker, close according to Vegas. You going with Jacare Souza or Uriah Hall here?
In this situation, look, I think Uriah Hall has got the striking to go against anybody in the division. However, I just don't know which Uriah Hall I'm going to get, and that's what throws me off a little bit, especially, you know, with the mental state. We've heard about this before with him, and I just think the ground game is the big separation there. So I'm going to go with Jacare Souza in this one. I think he takes it.
Kenny, Jacare Souza has remained competitive largely against the middleweight elite, but he is trying to avoid a third straight loss here and fourth in his last five. All of that mixed in with a win over Chris Weidman. That was all the way back in 2018 at UFC 230. You going with the jiu-jitsu guy here? I mean, Uriah thinks in a lot of respects that this is a classic striker versus grappler matchup, but Jacare does tend to start early and pretty aggressively on the feet at times, so.
Yeah, well, I would say that Uriah Hall should definitely watch out for the striking of Jacare as well. You know, he definitely has some power. He can surprise you with that. I think Uriah still has the advantage on the feet. However, I think for Jacare, he knows what he needs to do. He's going to have the huge advantage on the ground. I hope he decides to do that. Otherwise, I think it might be a quick night for Jacare. Uriah is very dangerous and very explosive. I do like Jacare Souza here. I think he gets it to the ground and gets either a TKO or submission.
It's going to be interesting to see how some of these corners change, right? I do have the corner sheet right now, Ken Flo, and it looks to me, if I'm correct, and I'll follow up on this when I get to Jacksonville, that none of the Fusion XL guys like Julian Williams are going to be in Jacare Souza's corner, and it looks like his wife might even be among those who is going to be in his corner. So there are some variables going into this that we'll have more of, obviously, on the broadcast Saturday night. All right, next up, it's strawweight. And again, the big fights are coming early here. This is number 7 versus number 8 at 115 pounds. Carla Esparza minus 160. The karate hottie, Michelle Waterson, plus 130. So, Ian, how about this nugget for you? If Waterson closes as the underdog, it'll be the 6th consecutive time she finds herself with that distinction. She's won a lot of fights as a dog. Plus 130 here against the former champion Carla Esparza. Who do you like?
It sounds so much better when you do it with your Boston accent. I like that. I think Carlos Sparza has definitely evolved lately, got some big wins. But on a gambling standpoint, if Michelle Waterson can keep this fight standing, I think she's got the better striking. I think those leg kicks make the difference in keeping the distance. I know that, you know, and off her back, she's very dangerous. And Esparza hasn't shown a lot of top jujitsu. She gets the fight to the ground. She likes to hang out in the guard sometimes. And I just think that Waterson's guard is active enough. You know, in a 3-round fight, that's the only part that scares me. In 5-round, I think these odds would be way different. But I'm going to roll the dice early on the underdog here. I do like Michelle Waterson's striking advantage. And if she can keep it on the feet, I think she could do it. So I'm going to go with the Karate Hottie.
I haven't picked a fight on the record, as Kenflo knows, since 2016 for obvious reasons. But, God, I mean, I can't even imagine how I would handle this exercise. It'd probably just be all underdogs, right? And just trying to get those extra points. Kenflo, the other side, it's Carla Esparza. I didn't think she'd be minus 160, but I do believe she deserves to be the favorite here. She's added muscle. She's tightened up her striking. She would destroy the woman who became the UFC champion. I know it was a long time ago, but I feel like she's fought a killer schedule. She's now won two straight to move back into contention. Are you going with Carla Esparza the favorite, or you're like Michelle Waterson, the underdog kid?
I'm going with Esparza here. I like the way that she matches up against the Karate Hottie. I think that she definitely has the better ground game. You know, I think Michelle is better on the feet, but I just don't see her getting it going early against Esparza. I think Esparza is going to find a way to get this fight to the ground, and she's going to grind out a decision win.
All right, we'll see where the line closes, but Carla Esparza right now, pretty significant favorite up there, minus 160. I thought I saw her closer to minus 140, but we'll see if there's any Ian Parker Waterson action that potentially moves that number. All right, Pettis Cerrone 2, but this time, guys, at welterweight rematch of a 2013 fight that was a lightweight title eliminator at the time. It was won by Anthony Showtime Pettis, who went on to win the belt in his next fight. He beat Cerrone by first round TKO. Body shot was the beginning of the end. Pettis favorite here, minus 150. Cowboy Cerrone is plus 120. He'll try to distance himself from what was obviously an ugly Conor McGregor loss back in January of this year. God, that seems like a long time ago. Kenflo, what do you think about Pettis and Cerrone this weekend?
I like Cerrone here, actually. I think Cerrone's a different guy than when they first fought back in the day. I think he's got to be aware of that left kick to the liver from Anthony Pettis. You know, the jury's out. You know, we all know what's going to happen with Cerrone. People are going to try to attack that body repeatedly, back him up, pressure him. You know, while Pettis, I think, can get the win here, I think he's taken a lot of damage over the last few fights. I think Donald Cerrone is going to be pretty fired up from his last loss against Conor McGregor. I think he'll be that much more prepared, and I like Cerrone to get the win.
Interesting analysis from Ken Flo. Obviously, when Vegas – go ahead, Flo.
I was going to add one other thing, and this not only applies to this fight, but it applies to the whole card, and I think it's something to consider. You know, for those fighters that require a lot of timing for their striking, you got to wonder how tuned in they're going to be on fight night with not having a lot of sparring time. And I think that's something to consider when you're looking at these fights and you're trying to break them down and, you know, give your predictions, which is obviously a difficult thing to do anyway. But for those fighters that particularly require a lot of timing on their part, I think it's going to be difficult for them to be at their best, I think, this Saturday night.
Yeah, and of course, a guy like Cerrone, the consummate Iron Man and workhorse who is used to all these different circumstances, driving in an RV right across the country to random fights, filming movies during some training camps, and then goes out and has his best performances. I think there's a lot of truth in what you just said. Now, Ian, obviously, when Las Vegas sets a line, they are trying to get two-way action. They are trying to get bets on both sides of the fight. I think they're going to get two-way action here with Anthony Pettis and Donald Cerrone, but our listeners want to know, where's your action?
My notes were here. I guarantee Kenny fucks me over and takes Cerrone here. No, and honestly, it's one of those things where do I see Cerrone losing? Would this be his third in a row? Has he ever done that in his career? And I think this is kind of, if anybody with a name left to fight, this is not, and this is not a knock on Anthony Pettis. He's still a great fighter, but he's not the same Anthony Pettis that was the champ that did land that body kick. I think that was even on his way to the top of the division. I think that this is Cerrone's, I don't want to say curtain call, but I think if he wins this fight decisively, I think maybe after he fights all 3 days in May, I know he wants those three cards. But, yeah, you know, I don't think this fight goes to the ground. I think Cerrone is fired up. I think that interview with him about how he felt about his performance with Connor really was a different side of Cowboy that we've seen, although he's always transparent, but, you know, just that vulnerable side. But now he's fired up. He's got another kid on the way that he's naming Riot. That is a badass name. He thought Danger was cool. Having a kid named Riot, that kid's going to fuck a lot of kids up in kindergarten. I can guarantee that. I wouldn't steal his apple juice. That kid's going to have a fucking mohawk and be awesome. I'm going to go with Cowboy here also. I think to Kenny's point, I wonder between the two fighters who can adapt to this better. And I mean, listen, Cowboy literally drives in the RV to wherever he's going to fight and stays there. So I think Cowboy, I do like him. And as the underdog, I'm a little surprised the odds are this far apart. I thought this was going to be like maybe a minus 120, you know, plus 105 situation. So I like Cowboy at plus 120.
So Cerrone's last win was exactly a year ago today, despite the fact that he's lost three in a row because he's so active. It was Ally Quinta, the five-round unanimous decision, and then losses to Ferguson, Gaethje, and Conor McGregor. Ken Flo, how about the UFC record-breaking 35th UFC appearance for Donald Cerrone? I remember when Stefan Struve said back in the day when they were doing that big card of all heavyweights, UFC 146, that he wanted to be the first UFC fighter to 50 UFC appearances.
Right.
And he's had some health conditions and everything else. But, you know, Jeremy Stephens and Donald Cerrone are in line eventually at some point in the next 2 years to get to 40 fucking UFC walks. Like, that can't be good for you.
How about us in 5 years being like, can you believe that Cerrone is going to be having his 100th appearance in the UFC? It's crazy that he's still going, you know. Walking in with the cane.
I know, man.
And the cowboy hat that's like ripped apart.
I'm willing. If you're going to say 5 years on Cowboy hitting the 100, I'm going to bet the under, because if he fights these three times this week, we know he's coming back and fight. He's going to fight 8 times this year. We know that's what's going to happen.
Well, Jeremy Stephens is 33 years old and he's making his 33rd UFC appearance. So Stephens actually might be the better bet to get to 40 UFC fights.
Fun fact, Jeremy Stephens had his first UFC fight when he was 11.
You know what? I think it actually, if I'm not mistaken, it was actually his 21st birthday. And it might have even been Dean Thomas. I think I just wrote that down a couple days ago.
You're correct.
Yeah. See, TJ, just encyclopedic.
He doesn't have notes. Knowledge. It's all right here.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? He's got that steel trap memory like Ken Flo and Joe Rogan. All right. Pay-per-view main card opener in the heavyweight division. By the way, Anakin Florian podcast merchandise coming in. You see the onesie? See the onesie? By the time it got here, it doesn't fit my kid anymore, of course. It took 3 months to ship, but no. All right. Pay-per-view main card opener. Where were we? In the heavyweight division. Greg Hardy, minus 210, the favorite here against the undefeated Cape Verdean Jorgen De Castro. Works security for the Fall River Public Schools there in Massachusetts, Flo. But we know he can fight. I mean, man, can he separate a man from consciousness? How about that knockout of Justin Taffa? You know, barely put any of his weight into it and let the bodies hit the floor. Kenny, we'll lead with you here. You going with Fall River's finest, Jorgen De Castro, or Prince of War, Greg Hardy?
Listen, I think Jorgen De Castro gets the upset win here. I'm going with the dude from Fall River. I think he catches Hardy and sends him to the shadow realm at some point.
All right, so Jorgen De Castro about plus 160 or so right now. Greg Hardy minus 210. Think you can find a plus 180 out there on De Castro if you look hot enough. So, Ian, in our time as friends, I'm not sure that you and I have talked more about a fighter singularly than Greg Hardy. 5 appearances in 2019. No UFC fighter can lay claim to that feat. He went 2-2 with a no contest, right? Got disqualified in the UFC debut for the illegal knee. No contest because of the inhaler in between rounds in his 4th UFC fight. But against a top 5 guy in Volkov, he didn't look out of his league. So, you know, I've been all in on Greg Hardy. I think it's a difficult matchup here. I don't think the odds reflect how good De Castro is. Ian Parker, which way you going?
Before I knew he was going to start fighting, I saw him at the Fort Lauderdale airport and I went to go say, hey, what's up? I heard you starting to train, you know, and he just kind of looked at me and growled. And I was like, all right, good luck. You know, I was like, all right, I'm not going to even, you know, you just ate. I'm good.
So he wasn't nice to you in your encounter.
No one's happy at the airport, you know, but I will say, like, a couple of years later, I met him at the Titan Fighting Championship. And when I went up to, it was the night before he fought. It was the night before the what the hell fucking thing's about. Thank you, inhaler incident. Yeah. And I said, hey, best of luck tomorrow. He's like, thanks, man. I wanted to be like, hey, remember me? You wanted to fucking eat me in the airport. But he was nicer this time around. So I got growled at, then he gave me a little pound. So it was cool. On a betting standpoint, I don't know how you pass up these odds at plus 180 or plus 170 on DeCastro. Again, my notes here were saying I really hope Flo doesn't go here, but you're smart, Kenny, so I had a feeling you would. Here's my thing with Hardy. Hardy's super athletic. I think he showed us a lot of maturation in his game against Volkov, but again, he was fighting a top five guy really early in his career. I think he even broke his hand. So this is going to happen. I think it's either going to be a Hardy three-round decision win, bouncing around, landing leg kicks, or he's going to get sent to the shadow realm by DeCastro. I think in a heavyweight division, there's more likely going to be a knockout than a decision. So I'm with Kenny here. This is a fun underdog to take just because of what he's shown us so far. So I'm going Jorgen DeCastro despite John's love for Greg Hardy.
Well, I love both guys, too. I mean, anybody who's working security at a public school in Massachusetts, I mean, vaults to the front of the line for me, of course. But, no, I would like to see Greg Hardy get more respect from the fan base for the time put in and living in the dorms at American Top Team. I don't think he deserves this much respect from Las Vegas. And oftentimes when the two of you end up on an underdog in this plus 170 range collectively together, it moves the line. So I would think here on a Monday people are going to hear that Jorgen DeCastro selection times two and maybe head to the window.
Yeah, and just one last thing. Again, I think to your point, John, that was the best thing to describe Hardy. Vegas-wise, minus 210, I wouldn't have placed him there. But I give the guy all the credit in the world. You go from the NFL making a lot of money, being a Pro Bowl, going through all the legal stuff, to then really he's dedicated himself in MMA a lot, as opposed to a lot of other guys that have jumped into the sport and kind of wanted that easy pass. He's done it the right way. And I think Kenny would probably agree that this is probably the right matchup, not necessarily for his style, but for where we really see him in his path in the heavyweight division.
All right. Good fight there in the heavyweight division to kick off the pay-per-view. Then we'll move to featherweight. Someone's probably getting hurt here. I've been watching film on these guys. I mean, how tough was Jeremy Stephens in that Yair Rodriguez fight to finish that fight as the stronger guy? You know, I mean, what that body shot would have done to a guy like me, Ken Flo, you know, how long I would be out of commission, not be able to pick up like a child, you know, and Stevens comes back and wins the third round. What a fucking warrior. All right. So Calvin Kattar minus 250, Jeremy Stephens plus 195. So the last time Jeremy Stephens won a fight, it was early 2018, a sensational knockout of Josh Emmett. But another guy, Kenny, who's been competitive against elite competition, Stephens, plus 195, though, against Calvin Kattar. Kenny, I know you got a lot of respect for Kattar and his boxing. How do you handicap the matchup?
I really love both these guys. Both are just such great dudes. You know, obviously proven warriors inside the octagon. I think that, you know, for Jeremy Stephens, I think this is a tough matchup for him. I think that Kattar tends to struggle, as he did against Magomed Sharipov, you know, against guys who have very good footwork. Stephens has good footwork, but not kind of like Zabit. I think that for Kattar, you know, I think because of his length, because of his reach, he's going to have an advantage here against Stephens. Stephens really going to have to get on the inside and do it repeatedly against someone like Kattar. Kattar has the knockout power as well. Perhaps not on the level of Jeremy Stephens, but with Jeremy Stephens, with, you know, his overhand, you kind of see it coming a little bit. I think Kattar's going to be onto that and ready. This is a close one, but I see Kattar winning this probably by decision, maybe a knockout, but probably by decision. Stephens is a hard guy to take out.
Yeah, that's great analysis, especially because I just watched the film, so it's fresh in my mind, and my opinion is far more amateurish, Ian Parker. I did believe there were a couple moments in that Kattar-Zabit fight where Calvin was very close to landing a seminal blow. It didn't happen. What do you think about Kattar and Stephens here in a big fight at 45?
I mean, Jeremy Stephens is a legend at this point. However, if he gets no easy fights. He gets no breaks. They give him nothing. Yeah. And these are fights literally where they say, listen, we're not going to let you get to 40 fights. We're just going to let you get punched in the head by these young guys that have crazy hands. I love Calvin Kattar here. That fight against Zabit, that thing goes five rounds. He wins that fight. I think he even could have finished it in the fourth or fifth round. His cardio looked good. In three rounds, I just think he's got more tools to win this fight. I think the speed's there. And more importantly, Kenny said the reach. If Stephens hits that hook, it could be lights out, but I think Kattar's boxing and his defensive boxing is just too good to let that happen. I think he's a smart fighter. I don't think he's going to get caught. So even at minus 250, I'm just telling you guys right now, I'm going to put a straight bet on Calvin Kattar as long as probably roping him into some parlays. I'm that confident in him.
Yeah. Interesting. Amazing when you look at the Jeremy Stevens body of work. 47th pro fight. Kem Flo ain't going to like that 15-16 with a no contest UFC record. But, man, the strength of schedule. A lot of big wins on there, obviously. And another big spot for Jeremy Lil Heathen Stevens taking on another recent Zabit victim, Calvin Kattar. All right, we're going to get to a feature bout at heavyweight. To do that, we're going to call on TJ DeSantis and the pronunciation of the week. So Francis Ngannou was to fight this man from Suriname in the main event in Columbus, Ohio. March 28th. Instead, it'll be three rounds this weekend. TJ, who am I talking about?
Jarzinho Rosenstrike.
Oh, I mean, this must be a repeat pronunciation of the week because you just sounded so good. Let's hear Biggie Boy.
Jarzinho Biggie Boy Rosenstrike. Jarzinho Biggie Boy Rosenstrike.
Can Flow Circle gets a square or what?
Yeah, we'll give it to him. We'll give it to him. Yeah.
Rosenstrike sounds outstanding pronouncing his own name, by the way. But TJ.
Biggie Boy.
It's terrifying.
All right, so let's get to this fight. I know I'm in the minority when I say I wish there was an interim title on the line, but again, the UFC Heavyweight Championship is probably not going to be contested from August 2019 to August 2020. So as far as I'm concerned, this is a title eliminator. Kind of wish it was five rounds. Maybe they won't need that many. Ngannou minus 280, Rosenstrike plus 220. Ian Parker, what are your thoughts on Ngannou and any chance you bet him in that minus 280 range?
Straight up at minus 280, no, because Biggie Boy can obviously get that, dude, that accent. If TJ would have hit that accent, you guys should have given him a free pass at any mistakes for at least a month. But I like Francis Ngannou here. I just think it's his time. He doesn't have to worry about getting taken down or anything. So I think Francis gets the win. Minus 280 is a tough one when you saw what Rosenstrike did with like 3 seconds left. So I like Ngannou here. I think it's his time. And I agree with you, John. This should be for an interim title.
Yeah, Ken Flo, Rosenstrike would not have this opportunity had he not pulled that win from the jaws of defeat against Alistair Overeem, was going to lose on the scorecards with 4 seconds to go, splits the Reem's lip, calls out Ngannou, and here we are. What do you think about Biggie Boy's chances to spring the upset?
You know, listen, I think this is a difficult fight to call in a lot of ways. I think we still don't know a whole lot about these guys. I think we've seen a lot from Rosenstrike. Obviously, we know what he's about over the course of almost 25 minutes in his fight against Overeem. And we know that he's got that nasty hook going backwards, which is a brilliant counterstrike and something that is going to be much needed against someone like Francis Ngannou. If he's able to, you know, lure Ngannou in and throw that left hook going backwards, I think Ngannou could be in for a short night. Now, I think Ngannou is the more powerful guy. I think he's the faster guy. I think he's going to be the larger heavyweight as well. I think he's been raring to go, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
I think he's a guy who thought he was going to be fighting for the belt around this time at this point. So this is the fight really to determine who is the most destructive heavyweight in that division. As far as knockout power, I think we'll get our answer. I do not see this one going the distance, but I'm going to go with Francis Ngannou here by knockout.
If you would have told me that Francis Ngannou, it would take him at least 13 UFC appearances to become a UFC champion, right? Because he can't do it this weekend in his 12th, so it'll be at least one more. I would have said no way. Watching him early on, just eventually he's going to break through, and I do believe, you know, if not before the year is out, certainly sometime in 2021, Ngannou will be the UFC heavyweight champion unless Jarzinho Rosenstrike upsets the madness and springs the upset this weekend. We'll see how it goes. That is your featured bout on pay-per-view, and that will give way to Dominic Cruz making a walk for the first time since December 30th, 2016. Co-headliner, UFC Bantamweight Championship, Henry Cejudo minus 250. Dominic Cruz plus 195. Ian Parker, first defense at 135 pounds for Cejudo. Who do you like?
This is such a this is, for all the obvious reasons that you've been hearing from everyone, this is just such a tough fight. I mean, Dominic Cruz, the footwork, the length, the experience, probably one of maybe three fighters ever that I just don't care about ring rust when it comes to him. However, I just have a lot of trouble picking against someone in Henry Cejudo right now that's at the pinnacle of their career, double champ status, even though they obviously stripped him of the 125 belt. You know, the question is Henry going to be able to get on the inside of Dominic? Is he going to be able to get to Dominic? Is he going to be able to bring this fight to the ground? I think he can. You know, Kenny pointed out something that I never knew, that Henry Cejudo competed in the Olympics. I'm just kidding. I obviously knew that. You know, Kenny was like, wait, he really didn't fucking know that? Why is he on the show? But, you know, I just think that Cejudo's athleticism, his wrestling, you know, the cardio between both guys, you know, is going to be there. I don't think Cruz knocks out Cejudo. You know, can he with that overhand? He can. I just don't see it happening. And if he doesn't do that, I think Cejudo is able to grind this out for 5 rounds. So I'm going Henry by decision. You know, I would love to see Dominic win this fight. On a betting standpoint, I will do a parlay, and I will have Henry as my last leg, and I will then, if it gets there, I will then throw the hedge on Dominic Cruz as the underdog right there. But for the main event challenge, I'm going to go with Henry Cejudo by decision. You're on mute.
All right, Ian Parker goes with Henry Cejudo by unanimous decision. You know, Cejudo really is something special, Kenny. We had our call with him on Friday. I mean, you can see my notes and just how much he gave me. He just gives you so much when he's not doing the whole King of Cringe Triple C thing. He's just so thoughtful. And the quote that really jumped off the phone for me was his ability to connect mind and body in a championship fight. You know, he really does consider himself to be the ultimate competitor. And for a while, he was just a wrestler, and now he considers himself MMA veteran, right? He's got almost twice as much UFC experience as Dominic Cruz. Cruz has a decade on the roster, but only 7 UFC fights. This will be his 7th UFC appearance. Obviously, Cruz's story on these airwaves, well-documented, most decorated bantamweight of all time. You know, he's still 22-2, only one career loss in the weight class, and that was against Cody Garbrandt. I absolutely love this fight. I do believe it's more competitive than the odds suggest, but a lot of variables with Dominic Cruz. I mean, I guess my biggest question that he answered for me on Friday is, has he lost a step? Is he slower in sparring, in training? I think we're going to have a lot of questions answered, and I can't wait to see it play out, and I can't wait to hear who you think is going to win.
This is a fight for the MMA purist, right? When you look at, you know, the level and the skill that both of these men possess, these are the kind of fights that get me most excited. I think that Henry Cejudo is the kind of guy who is, you know, putting together that mind, body, spirit connection, no doubt about it. I think he has proven himself as one of the best competitors to ever step inside the octagon. You don't become a gold medalist in freestyle wrestling in the Olympics because you don't know how to compete. This guy is absolutely brilliant. I think that he's much smarter than he likes to come across. You know, he's had this, you know, persona of the last year or so of, you know, the King of Cringe and Triple C. But when you hear him actually talk about the sport, if you're able to get him aside and have those conversations that you've had, John, it's clear he's a very intelligent guy. Eric Albarracin is an awesome coach who's been with him forever. I really respect those guys, and what they have done inside the octagon is just genius. It's amazing what they've been able to accomplish. Now, I believe Henry Cejudo is the best bantamweight in the world, except the way that he matches up against Dominic Cruz, it is a very difficult fight. Now, I see it a little differently than Ian Parker. I think Cejudo's only chance at winning is to knock out Dominic Cruz. He's got to finish Dominic Cruz if he wants to win this fight. If he thinks he's going to get to a decision and beat Dominic Cruz, I think he's mistaken here. I think the path to victory here is to go out and try to stop Dominic. And I just don't see it happening. I think Dominic Cruz is a guy who knows exactly what he's doing. He's had the ability to watch all of these fights and all of these fighters and break things down for a long time. And we haven't seen Dominic Cruz. Do you think Dominic Cruz hasn't been training and hasn't been improving since his fight against Cody Garbrandt? I think he absolutely has. And we haven't had an opportunity to see how he's made those adjustments. And if you look at the way he fights, you know he's going to come back sharper, smarter, and more difficult to defeat. I like Dominic Cruz by decision in this fight against Henry Cejudo. I just don't see Cejudo getting to him enough to catch him. That's the problem.
Very interesting. Cruz sort of intimated that he was training for a 3-rounder, but it takes him about 6 weeks to get into real great primal shape. And all these athletes are ready to go. Ian, you got one thing quick?
Yeah. So Kenny, I just want to kind of touch on one thing Kenny just said with the improvements. Here's the only thing I'm going to disagree with you on in that one. There's no doubt that Dominic Cruz trains every day. We see the underwater stuff. But is there anyone that he has been training with that's really that can help him develop into the better fighter that we already know that he is? You know, we've seen Cejudo, who he has beaten, you know, over the time that Dominic hasn't been there. That's the part that throws me off. To your point, yes, we know Cruz knows the game, right? We know he knows how to get better, but just in my opinion, this is where I think Cejudo's experience within the cage the last few years that Dom hasn't been there, who he's been, has made him such a better fighter that you could study tape all you want, but every time we've seen Cejudo go in there, we've seen a very different, more well-rounded fighter, and that's what makes him more dangerous. This is a wild matchup in regard to styles in general. I can't wait for it. This is bonkers, you know?
I agree with you. I just think there's no one like Dominic Cruz. How do you prepare for a guy like that? There's no one that he's fought that can give him that kind of preparation. So in that regard, I find it very interesting. Can Cejudo win the fight? Absolutely. But it's just not an easy out unless you're really have someone who can mimic that and unless you can really be disciplined. You know, so far, obviously, Cody Garbrandt has had the smartest game plan, but I do think we're going to see a different Dominic Cruz from that last fight.
Amazing how comfortable Cody Garbrandt was so early on in that fight. I mean, he just knew exactly how he had to approach that challenge. All right, UFC 249 main event for the interim lightweight championship. Tony Ferguson minus 175 versus Justin Gaethje, who is plus 145. Of course, we'll need the round and the method of victory. Ian, who do you have?
Oof, if this fight actually happens, man, I got chills.
What do you mean actually happens? Get listen, that noise out of here.
Guys tripped over wires. They're eating cake. I don't know what's going on in this
just
world right now.
Just give me a pick if it happens. Get the fuck out of here.
I'm on Team El Kukui. Listen, Justin Gaethje is a very exciting man. John got so mad at me for the first time. You look, I was scared of you right there like you were Jarzinho Rosenstrike, you know, biggie boy. Look, Justin Gaethje's way to win this fight, he's got to land that right hand. And Tony gets clipped in almost every single fight. And if you get clipped by Justin Gaethje, you usually kind of almost die. I'm hoping, though, with Tony's preparation, he's had enough time to see when Justin winds up, when he's landing that punch. I think Tony's got more tools. I think cardio-wise, if this gets past the second round, Tony all day. You know, we've seen what he does in the later rounds, and we've seen Gaethje kind of fall back in the later rounds, especially in that Dustin Poirier fight. I just think this is Tony's time. Gaethje's deserving. If unless the world and God just hates Tony Ferguson, he loses. So especially at minus 175, I don't think you can get a better number than that. He's so deserving of this opportunity. They should be saying he's defending his interim title because I don't think he ever lost it either, right? I'm going Tony Ferguson here. I'm going round four TKO. I think he is able to tire Justin out and get the finish in the fourth round. So I'm going with that psycho motherfucker Tony Ferguson here.
All right, Ian Parker goes Ferguson, round four TKO. Kenny, both of these guys had a lot of nice things to say about each other when I spoke with them on Friday. You know, Tony feels like Justin is richly deserving of this fight, you know, for a piece of the UFC lightweight title. Gaethje, I think my biggest takeaway was just how valuable the extra few weeks have been for him. But Gaethje's training has been almost identical to what it would be without a global pandemic backdrop. So I do expect Justin Gaethje to absolutely be at his best. The question is, will it be good enough to beat Tony Ferguson, who hasn't lost since Cinco de Mayo 2012? That's 8 years ago tomorrow. Interim lightweight championship on the line. Ferguson nearing a 2-1 favorite. Who do you like?
You know, the cliche that immediately comes to mind is what happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object. You know, this is kind of how I see this. And I think that whoever's able to lead the dance, whoever is able to back up the other fighter is going to have the advantage. Both these guys are known to do that. Who is going to do that? I do not know that answer. I think that Gaethje possesses more power as far as one punch knockout power. Tony Ferguson, you know, throws you into the meat grinder and just kind of chews you up over time and kind of zaps you of your energy, of your will, and then he finishes you off either with a submission or, you know, a TKO. I think that it's clear that if this fight goes, you know, past the third round or into the third round, you got to have Ferguson. I think his chances greatly increase. I think the first 10 minutes, I think Gaethje's chances increase. Ferguson is an extremely difficult guy to finish. We've seen him get hurt in previous fights, but he finds a way to either roll away and kind of, you know, weather the storm, get back to his feet, actually recover on the guard, you know. So he has so much experience and he has so much intelligence when he fights. It's a hard guy to bet against, right? I mean, look at how consistent he's been over the course of his career. Both these guys have taken a lot of damage, but I think that for Ferguson, he just has, you know, just an insane amount of experience at the highest level of the game. I think he has the better submission game. I think Gaethje probably has the better wrestling, but we don't really see that, you know, take place in his fights. I can see Gaethje maybe catching him early, but I think Ferguson is going to be able to weather the storm, and I think Ferguson gets a TKO right around the fourth or the fifth round. I'll go fourth round.
All right, so Ferguson TKO round four, and Ken Flo, when he fought, do you have something, Ian?
Kenny, you hopping on my back on that one, huh?
Hey, did you go
wanna,
fourth round as well?
You don't want to play the prices, right? No. You know what? I love that you did that, to be completely honest, because
He's focused on his own selection.
No, yes, and that just kind of makes me feel better about my play, too, on Tony. So I like when Kenny does that and doesn't even realize. It also means he's not listening to me, but that's, you know, we'll just kind of push that.
Try to tune me out.
Yeah. Collecting his thoughts. But we called that fight when Tony fought Lando Venata, right, when he was in that unforgettable, imminent danger, and of course, didn't lose that night and hasn't lost since. All right, a few quick picks on the way out, because we got to get you guys on the record for all 12 of these fights at UFC 249. Ian, Ryan Spann, prohibitive favorite here in the light heavyweight division, minus 450. Smiling Sam Alvey, plus 325. Who do you like?
I like Ryan Spann, but you got to parlay him. Minus 450 is a rough number.
Ken Flo, Ryan Spann or Sam Alvey for you?
Spann.
All right, Bryce Mitchell off the twister of Matt Sales late last year, minus 155 against American Top Team's Charles Rosa, who is plus 125. Rosa also coming back off a big win here. Ian, what do you think, Mitchell or Rosa for you?
Between the twister and almost losing a nut, I'm going Bryce Mitchell.
Ken Flo, Mitchell, Rosa at featherweight. Who do you have?
Yeah, I like Bryce Mitchell as well.
All right, Vicente Luque, minus 280. Nico Price, plus 220. This is a rematch of a fight that took place in 2017. I think Nico is a completely different beast than he was then. Ian Parker, you going Nico Price or Luque in the rematch?
Oh, this is so hard. I'm going to go Luque only because of the ground game. I think he's got more tools to win, but it wouldn't surprise me if Nico lands something wild.
Kenny, Luque Price?
I like Nico Price here, actually. I think he catches Luque on the feet. Luque is a very clean striker offensively, but defensively does make a lot of mistakes. I see him getting caught by Nico Price, a guy who I think hits harder than him.
All right, and lastly, even though this isn't the first fight of the night, Fabricio Werdum, minus 295 as he returns against Alexio Linick, who is plus 250. Pretty favorable matchup, I think, for Werdum. Ian, Werdum or Olenek for you?
Yeah, I like Werdum here. I'm actually shocked that's not minus 400, to be honest with you. So I really
like
that Caballo one.
As well?
Yeah, I do. Listen, if you have a parlay, I mean, Fabricio Werdum is a must on that play. So, yeah, this is a perfect fight for Werdum.
Yeah. All right. Ian Parker, MMA on social media. Great stuff. 12 predictions today. We will see how it goes for you and talk to you next Monday, my man. Thank you so much.
You got it, bro.
All right, that'll do it for the main event challenge. Team Anik leading Team Florian 33-31. We'll see how it goes at UFC 249. And with that, it is now time for more UFC 249 analysis from a betting perspective. Let us get the pick to click.
Time now for the pick to click. The pick to click.
All I have to do is bet on the winner, and I'll never lose.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
All right, today's Pick to Click brought to you by Oddshark.com. Oddshark is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks with expert in-depth analysis. For each game, their free statistics, numbers, and trends will help you make the sharp picks on game day. Head over to Oddshark and start playing like a shark today. It is Oddshark.com. Do not forget that second S. And now joining us in his usual slot during a pay-per-view week, but from a different locale, it is the sports analyst from Oddshark.com, the great Joe Osborne, on social media at JTFOZ. Joe, sir, it's a pleasure to see you on camera. Beard is filling out nicely. How are you today?
Yeah, I've really embraced the beard look, guys. You know, I put a little bit of product in the hair for you. And, you know what? Welcome to my my basement. You know, I have the wife and the kids upstairs, but I've got a pretty good routine going Monday through Friday. I come down here and get a little bit of work done. You know, it's nice to have some actual live sports with actual human beings competing against each other this weekend. You know, it's going nuts this weekend. The lead story in sports, you know, you can only hear so much about Andy Dalton and Mitch Trubisky, right? Oh. So it's getting a bit out of hand. So thankfully, we have some actual sports to talk about here.
So I know you got a lot of balls in the air at all times. You mentioned you have the children. But like this Saturday, how much of these 7 hours of UFC programming will you actually be able to sit down and ingest, you know, uninterrupted?
Oh, man. Well, the kids go to bed early, thankfully. We've got a good routine. It took a little while.
Yeah.
They get up early, though, is the thing, right? So I plan on watching the entire card. And, you know, on top of all that, it's also Mother's Day.
That's
on
right.
Sunday, of course. So I'm sure you guys and a bunch of other guys with kids out there can relate. There will be no sleeping in for us dads. So you just got to suck it up, right?
Except for this guy who will be sitting in a hotel by himself in Jacksonville, Florida, with basically nothing
Ooh,
to do but
baby.
Sleep and get ready for Wednesday. But yes, no, of course, Mother's Day. I better get something going there. Thanks for the reminder, Joe. All right, so you have told me privately that you think this is a pretty good betting card top to
yes.
bottom. So what can you tell us about UFC 249 and where your action might reside?
Yeah, lots of great spots here. So let's start with the main event, you know, Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje. Tony Ferguson minus 180, Gaethje coming back plus 150. And I love Tony Ferguson here. So the question then becomes, how do you want to bet it? So I think Ferguson is going to finish him. You could get him inside the distance at minus 125. But my official bet for this is going to be Ferguson to win by TKO or KO at plus 230.
Wow.
So why do I like that bet? Gaethje is a guy, he takes a ton of damage in there, doesn't he? You look at significant strikes absorbed per minute in their UFC careers. Gaethje, 9.67 by comparison. Tony Ferguson, 3.75. So Gaethje, you know, it's kill or be killed. And that strategy versus a very elite fighter like Tony Ferguson, probably not the best strategy you can use. We've seen, Tony Ferguson, maybe not the most power, but you see what he does to dudes' faces in there? Absolutely slicing and dicing. And, you know, take a look at Gaethje when, you know, 4-2 in the UFC, pretty good. The most exciting fighter, you know, definitely in the discussion. But when the competition rises, Dustin Poirier, Eddie Alvarez, he was TKO'd and KO'd by those guys. So, yeah, I love Ferguson in the main event, plus 230 to win by TKO or KO.
So the co-headliner features Dominic Cruz back in a competitive setting for the first time since 2016. He's about plus 195. I've seen some plus 200s out there against Henry Cejudo. Any value on Dominic for you or any bet on that co-main event?
Yeah, I think Cruz, he's a guy. He is. It's more of a lean, but I do think he's worth the risk. You know, it won't be a big bet, maybe a half a unit or something like that. But, you know, the thing that's going to come up with most casual fans is ring rust, ring rust, ring rust. And, John, I've had you on Odd Shark programming plenty of times, and I've asked you, like, leading up to the McGregor fights, you know, hey, what about the ring rust factor? And the example you always give me is Dominic Cruz. He's a guy who doesn't really believe in it, and he's back talked up before. You know, he was off from 3 years, 2011 to 2014, comes in his first fight back, wins KO a minute, 1 second in. So that's one side of it. Then you look at Henry Cejudo, you know, he's climbing that pound-for-pound ladder, isn't he? He's really improving all areas of his game. But with each passing fight, he's also getting a little bit more arrogance. He's also falling in love with his striking a lot more. And that could get him in the trouble versus a guy like Cruz, who probably has the most unorthodox footwork in maybe MMA history. You know, he's not just going to stand in front of him and trade. So I think Cruz, he's definitely worth a little sprinkle there, plus 200, plus 180, whatever your book is offering.
It's interesting because I'm not sure Vegas is taking into account, and again, far smarter men and women than me, but Cejudo is coming off a major surgery and a year layoff in his own right, as a lot of these athletes are because of COVID-19, right? So I don't know. I just felt like the fight would be closer on paper, at least according to the number based upon some of those Cejudo variables that maybe people aren't taking into account. I don't know. So, Joe, before I ask you quickly about the NFL and how your day-to-day life has changed, anything else that piques your interest on UFC 249? I know Ken Flo kind of likes Nico Price in that plus 220 range. I think a lot of Ken Flo's sentiments today are that Fabricio Werdum might be the safest bet on the card from a betting perspective. Anything else jump off the card for you, Joe?
Yeah, this one really stood out to me. It is my favorite bet on the entire card. So I was very curious to see what the over-under rounds would be in the Ngannou-Rosenstrike fight. So it's set at 1.5 rounds, and the under on that is at minus 105. So I was shocked to see it at minus 105. So why do I like that so much? So just look at the pattern of each of these guys' careers. Ngannou, 7 of his last 9 fights finished in the first round. Rosenstrike, 7 of his 10 career fights finished in the first round. Now, a lot of people might come at you and say, well, what about the Derek Lewis fight for Ngannou? That's a gigantic outlier, guys. You know, both guys were kind of a bit trigger shy, maybe. And then when he fought for the title versus
Stipe, right?
You know, he was just outclassed there. So if you look at the pattern of each of these guys, they're going to be in there just throwing smoke, throwing leather. And from everything I've seen on social media in the build-up to this event, which has gone on forever now, I don't know if there's a hungrier guy to fight than Francis on Saturday night. So I absolutely love that bet, minus 105.
Under 7.5 minutes. I absolutely love that, man. You know, I'm allowed to say I love that, and I do believe that fight is not going to still be happening late in round two. All right, so before we let you go, man, just curious how your day-to-day has been up north there and sort of adjusting on the fly. I mean, are you looking at NFL futures? I mean, when you don't have games to analyze on a daily basis, what's filling your plate?
Yeah, so I definitely miss the daily routine of, you know, getting in the morning and handicapping a bunch of games, doing a show, a bunch of social media content. Then you watch the games play out. Hopefully you win a few of those bets. And then you do it all again the next day. It's like Groundhog Day, but it's an incredible version of Groundhog Day.
Right,
so
now version of Groundhog Day.
Yeah, so now it's just kind of event-based. You know, we had the NFL draft, so that was an excellent 2 weeks of build-up, a ton of different content. It was the most watched NFL draft of all time, the most bet NFL draft of all time. So that went pretty good. And, you know, we got the UFC back, so this is fantastic. So it's all looking forward to this. So we have the event Saturday, then one the Wednesday after, another one after that. So I think they're going to be coming fast and furious, which is great. Hopefully we get some news. I think Major League Baseball is probably going to be the first of the major team sports back. But yeah, a lot of stuff is reacting to what is happening in the NFL. So they have odds for absolutely everything up. And one of the bets I love the most, and you guys, the Boston guys, you're probably going to like this. So this is a movie we've seen before with people counting out the New England Patriots, right? How many times has this happened during the season, before a season, after a season, when they lose? And it's happening again. You know, they've won the AFC East 16 of the last 17 years. Now everyone's handing it to the Buffalo Bills, including odds makers who have the Bills as the favorite to win the division. You can get the Patriots at plus 145. And I think that's a great spot. You know, people are kind of ignoring the fact that the Bills played a bit of a cupcake schedule last season. They went just 1-4 versus other teams that made the playoffs. And the Patriots, it's going to be all about that defense. Still one of the best defenses in the league. And if you don't think Bill Belichick has a plan, you're absolutely nuts. So Jared Stidham, we don't know a whole lot about the guy. It looks like they're going to go with him. I'm willing to bet he's going to be, you know, a pretty good quarterback. So Patriots plus 145 to win the division. They're going to play in a lot of boring games dominated by their defense where they're running the ball, a lot of checkdowns and stuff like that from Stidham. Yeah. But that's a bet I'd make at even money. So plus 145 Patriots to win the AFC East. I love it.
I think there's a lot of value there. I mean, too close to my heart to bet personally, of course, Ken.
Of course.
But I like what you're thinking there. And the thing about Belichick, too, he's 68 years old. He's not going to tank. He's not going to give away a season. He's trying to win the goddamn Super Bowl. And if he's going to do that, he's certainly going to win the AFC East first. So,
especially after losing Brady, I think he's got a fire lit under his ass. Unlike anything else, he's like, nah, I'm the man. I'm the man.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, on Twitter, you can find him at JTFOZ, oddshark.com for the daily content. It's good to see you, buddy. We'll see if they make you shave when you go back into the office. We're hoping not.
I've embraced it, man. The wife likes it, so hey, good. I'm good.
That's
to go.
That's all that matters. All right, man. Well, we will talk to you in the not-too-distant future, likely before UFC 250, which could go down on June 6th. But appreciate the insight, as always, and we'll talk to you soon, kid.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Good luck, and good luck to all the listeners out there.
Thank you so much. Joe. There he is, Joe Osborne. Certainly one of the must-follows for me on social media, at JTFOZ. Don't forget, AnnaFlorianPodcast.com is now live. So, Ken Flo, you heard Longo talk about opening the doors up. What can you tell us about Meraki BJJ? I mean, has there been anything progressing in California, or still status quo?
I wish I had something for you, man. Yeah. We are kind of just waiting to hear on when things are going to open up. You know, we expect that we probably won't be opened up till at least June. You know, we're hoping sooner, obviously, you know, whenever it's possible and safe to be able to do so. But we already taking precautions as far as, you know, we're always keeping the gym clean. You know, we're doing everything from thermometers to, you know, coming up with, you know, ideas of how we're going to keep this, you know, how we're going to run things when the doors do open and when we're allowed to do so. So, we want to make sure that it's done safely, that obviously we're following the protocols of what the state gives us. And, and we're also hoping to stay alive as a business. It's been tough and a little stressful, you know, especially when you're kind of in limbo. You're not quite sure when things are going to open up. And, you know, our community and our members have been really supportive and great, but we don't know how long this is going to go on.
All right. Well, MerakiBJJ.com, and hopefully the dust clears at some point here, man. I just feel for all the small business owners out there, and I feel for everybody who's dealing with whatever circumstance they're dealing with. One thing I want to do to close the show today, if you are a high school senior and you're listening to this program, especially 70 minutes in, you're probably a diehard UFC fan. If you are the parent of a high school senior who lost their senior spring and lost their prom and isn't going to get to walk at graduation, I want to hear from that person. I want to put that person potentially on the air next week here on the Anakin Florian podcast, because I know there are people who can't string back-to-back meals together. I know there are people suffering all over the globe. But for those of us who are parents and are dealing with children at all different ages, I do feel for the parents who are dealing with a high school senior. That was the best time of my life, my senior spring. You know, spraying fire extinguishers in academic buildings and skipping school and smoking a bunch of weed and doing bad things, right? So could have left that last detail out, I guess. But if you are a high school senior out there and you listen to the Anakin Florian podcast, you're a diehard UFC fan, come recap UFC 249 with us next Monday, and maybe that'll help what obviously has not been the spring that that you were looking for. So with that, Flo, awesome. I got to get packing for Jacksonville, Florida. Thanks to our guests today, Ray Longo, Ian Parker, Joe Osborne, TJ DeSantis on the audio side, Cody Merrow on the social and video side. UFC 249 is upon us. Of course, we will break it all down for you next Monday. And we got two more sets of predictions, of course, on Monday for the Wednesday show, headlined by Anthony Smith and Glover Teixeira, and then the heavyweight main event on May 16th between Alistair Overeem and the returning Walt Harris. With that, for the Flo, John Anderson, so long. Thank you all for listening. AnnickFlorianPodcast.com if you want some merchandise. If not, yo fucking later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
You sound terrible.
John Anik.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Kenny Florian.
I have a whole team of people who cut my hair.
Oh, good for you.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.